Hello, hello. Today is a very special episode with a special guest, and we're going to be talking about Overeaters Anonymous and key considerations that you can make.
Welcome to another episode of Binge Eating to Food Freedom with me, Katie Papo. If you're ready for genuine and lasting freedom from binge eating, emotional eating, or out-of-control food issues, you are in the right place. Subscribe, follow, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, hello. So welcome to a new episode. And first, I would like to introduce my special guest, Hannah Fansler. Hannah, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, good to see you.
Good to see you too. So for those of you guys who don't know, Hannah worked with us last year towards the beginning of the year, right? It was only last year. Geez.
It's been about a year exactly. I started last, the very beginning of June.
Oh, wow. Cool. So happy 1 year anniversary to us. And Hannah's been on our team now for about 6 months, right? Since September, maybe more.
Months, yeah. Yeah,
something like that. So Hannah's been a huge help to our clients. And today I wanted to invite her on to in this conversation about Overeaters Anonymous because it is so popular, especially because AA is so popular. And we wanted to talk about Overeaters Anonymous, why key considerations if this has been your path to recovery. Maybe it has been working in some ways for you. Maybe it has not been working for you at all. Maybe you're thinking about joining. Maybe you've been in for years. So maybe I'll let you start, Hannah, kind of explaining, because you have a long history with OA. So maybe I'll let you kind of introduce that.
Sure. I had, you know my background story, but I had struggled with binge eating and bulimia for about 25 years. And amongst many of the things that I had tried, I had done 12-step groups, specifically OA. And that was to try to overcome this, you know, overeating, binge eating behaviors. And so I think I was involved for about 8 years as far as OA was concerned, and weekly meetings and very involved. I would even lead meetings and met some fantastic people there that I still keep in touch with because it was great for the support, but it really didn't help me at all with my eating behaviors. And that's just my personal experience.
Got it. So we're going to talk about in this episode some factors of OA specifically, but also binge eating support groups or accountability groups in general. And these are some things that a lot of people don't consider when they get into them. So the first thing that I wanted to bring up today, and I would say that if I had a bone to pick or the biggest bone to pick with OA, would be the fact that it is an abstinence-based protocol. And the reason for that is because, you know, we look at AA and we see the success of that organization and many people whose lives have been saved from AA. And then, of course, there were all these other branches of AA, NA and OA and other addictions that followed the same structure and format and community group. So the issue, though, that I see is that with all of these other drugs or substances or even behaviors, we have the option to be abstinent from those things. So the model of AA, for example, lends itself very well to things that we can be abstinent from. Food, I believe, is a completely different animal, because food we cannot be abstinent from. And not only can we not be abstinent because we need to eat to live, but at the same time, we know it from psychology, we know it from our biology, that binge eating, what is the number one cause of binge eating, is restriction. So abstinence is like the ultimate restriction. And I'm curious, Hannah, like, what was your experience with that, since you did spend time in OA, and I know you also know others who have spent a good portion of their energy there. Did you find that the abstinence portion was affecting your behaviors, your food behaviors?
Absolutely. I think for me, it was very, abstinence was this goal that I was constantly trying to achieve, but I couldn't quite get there. I was just listening to your last podcast or a recent one that was about, are we scared to fail? And it also talked about being scared to succeed because you've gone through so many times that failure becomes your norm. Failure becomes the standard to which what you're used to. And so it's really hard, and it becomes fearful actually to start seeing some success. The ego starts to feel very threatened by that because it is so unfamiliar by that point. For me, abstinence was one of those things that I constantly tried to reach, but I couldn't ever really attain for very long. And it was more about willpower. And for me, it was also a really difficult thing because it brought in spirituality. And so my spirituality started getting sucked into my eating disorder. And instead of just separating eating from God, the two became entwined in a really unhealthy way. So I found that my spiritual basis started to really suffer. It became kind of this vortex that the worse I got with the eating disorder, the worse and the more distant I felt from my higher power. So it was a difficult thing, abstinence. And yes, you have to eat several times a day. You can't not eat. That's also an eating disorder. So it's tricky. You cannot just say, I'm not going to eat anymore. Or you have to eat, but it's an obstacle you were faced with multiple times a day. And so the more I tried to stay abstinent, the more I was thinking about food, the more it increased my food obsession.
Right. And this is what we see all the time. And you've seen it in the people who are in our group together, the clients who you worked with thereafter, that when we restrict or when we have that energy of scarcity around food and we live with that energy, it fuels the obsession, it fuels the binges, it fuels all of that. And we have other episodes that go much deeper into that, so we won't get too much into it here because we want to cover other factors regarding OA. Yeah. But we wanted to establish that as like one of the core fundamental issues that really does make it different from AA or NA or when you're abstaining from any substance because food is a necessity. Yeah. And I would love if we could circle back to your higher power comment, because I remember, and I don't know if you saw, I sent you your zoom out exercises from the program. Can you kind of maybe, for those of us who do identify with a higher power or God, or we have some element of spirituality in our lives, would you mind sharing that part of your journey?
Sure. I guess I just felt like the more I tried to meet these rules and regulations that were part of the group, as far as the 12 steps, following the 12 steps, turning it over to God, I would do that multiple times a day, and then I would still end up binging or purging. And again, that podcast that I just listened to today, it resonates so much with me because I had journals upon journals promising, I will never do this again. I am not going to do this again. Today is a new start. But I couldn't keep those promises because I didn't know how. I was sucked into this eating disorder that I could not get out of, and to the point where I was crying as I would eat and could not stop eating, and knew that I was just going to go and purge anyway, and just feeling totally desperate and hopeless. And this was after even, times I would come home from the meeting and I would binge. So I think just feeling like so distant from my higher power, because I was relying on this higher power, to which I call God, to help me to overcome my eating disorder. And when I failed, I felt abandoned and like I was a failure to God. And, you know, desperately asking and seeking answers, but feeling like I wasn't getting any answers to my prayers. And that just made me feel even more like, well, I'm just this failure. I can't do this. How come everybody else can do it? How can they turn it over to their higher power and somehow they're able to stay abstinent? Why can't I do that? Maybe it's my relationship with God, you know? And it became this, like I said, this kind of a intertwined type of thing that I don't think was healthy for my spirituality.
I had the same experience as you. I remember journals and journals and journals promising and begging God to help me, like, and it never happened. It was just me breaking the promises again and again. And I also had the same experience that you shared about the groups. And it wasn't OA, the brand of OA, but it was just within a place of my work. This came to me the other day because someone else had invited me on their podcast and we were talking about this. I was leading these food addiction support groups, and I would binge my worst after those meetings. And I felt the binge was not the worst part. Yes, I felt sick, but the worst part was feeling so wildly out of integrity with myself that I felt like unworthy to be doing anything or helping anyone. Yet I had this huge desire to help people and to help myself, but I could not. I just felt so unworthy of even being in a helper role when I could not help myself. And I feel like that is one of another issue that's not necessarily unique to OA, but can be one of those factors that come up with groups like that, where a lot of the bonding of the group is suffering focused. Mm-hmm. And often the group leaders themselves are also still suffering. So it is more of this blind leading the blind situation. And it's not necessarily true for every group, because in some cases, like, you know, in AA, there are people 30 years sober who are so inspiring to those who are new. So I'm not making like a blanket generalization, but it is quite common enough to acknowledge, I think, that when we join a group like that, where the leader is still struggling, where everyone around us is still struggling, and this I know is something you wanted to discuss, we start to really identify with the suffering, with the struggle. And because we see all of this hopelessness, despair, and desperation around us from those of us, you know, who from our peers and our leaders, we start to really believe in our core that this is not fixable, that this is not manageable, that we are going to be stuck like this, because there's all of this proof around us that reiterates that belief. And then we take on this identity as a binge eater. And I know you wanted to touch on that whole concept of identity.
Yes, I think although my particular groups that I attended really tried to focus on the solution rather than the problem, the solution was something that wasn't working for me. So the solution was still restriction. The solution was still saying, you know, you can't have these foods in order to stay abstinent. It was still focused on the scale. And what did the scale say? And assuming that if you are abstinent, your body is going to start losing the weight. And if you weren't losing weight, people would start to wonder, are you staying abstinent? You know, there was still some judgments going on there, and a feeling or an expectation to meet external type of goals or milestones. There was no tuning into myself at all. Even though I had gone through the steps several times and had sponsors and worked the steps, and it wasn't something that stuck with me for long term, because it was something that I was trying to meet outside of myself. and I was doing soul searching, I honestly think in some ways it prepared me for your program because I had already done some of the internal work, but I also didn't have the how-tos. I needed not only the internal work, but I needed some practical steps, like this is what you're going to do. And so that really helped me. But my biggest thing with any of the 12 steps is one of the first step is saying before everyone, admitting that you are, you know, an overeater and that your life has become unmanageable. And they treat it as a disease, which there is no cure. So it's only something that can be managed, not cured. And I just feel like when your identity gets wrapped up into any chronic illness or disease, you're not free. You're stuck in that disease and you don't think that there is a way out. You might hope that there's a way out, but you don't know. And when you're actually told, no, this is something that can be changed, you can change your mindset, change your brain, rewire. For me, that was huge. That was like, I don't have to be this eating disorder anymore. The eating disorder is a separate thing from Hannah. That's not who I am, and it's not who I have to stay. So that was like freedom right there, just to realize there's a different way to do it. And so for me, that was one of my biggest things, is just your identity. One's identity gets caught up in it as you're going through their program. You are constantly, you're not saying I'm a recovered eater. You're not saying anything about recovery, even if you've been abstinent or whatever for 20 something years, they still say I am a overeater. And it's still part of the identity. And so I felt like I couldn't grow there. I couldn't break out of that. It's like you're stuck in the chrysalis as a butterfly. And you know that it's time for you to move past that and actually, you know, come out of that shell. But I couldn't do it while I was staying there. I had to leave that behind to have a totally different mindset and say, no, I don't have to accept this as my reality. This is not. Just was at a point where I didn't want to do it anymore.
I think you're right that that's one of the first shifts that has to happen for recovery in this, or really any recovery, mm-hmm. is adopting the notion that this is not a permanent condition and it's also not who you are.
Yeah.
And only then can we even get on board for a process. Because if we go into a process assuming that this is unmanageable and we're doomed before we start, what kind of attitude does, like, what kind of results are bred from that attitude? And I have friends who are active members of AA and leaders in AA. And I've had this conversation with a close friend of mine that she does not identify, even though that's part of the process within AA, she does not identify as an addict. It doesn't mean she says, oh, I'm not an addict. That means I'm going to start doing drugs again. Right. It's not the same, but she doesn't want to wrap her identity in this idea of being an addict. She wants to wrap her identity in the things that support her growth. And I'm a grower, I'm a healer, and I've also found, you know, with groups in general, it's helpful to, when we seek out groups and support and community, that they are aligned with the person who we want to be more of. Like, for example, I struggled with anxiety my whole life, and I'm not looking up, you know, groups of like sufferers from anxiety. Like, I'm looking up groups of meditators and yogis and, you know, people who are really working towards their peace instead of trying to like wrangle their anxiety. So there is also that difference between, what are you moving toward and knowing what your vision for yourself looks like rather than what you don't want. It's important to know what we don't want, but it's also important to know what you do want. Right. So that way you can surround yourself with those people who are that, And we know that we become more and more like the people around us. Right. So when you're choosing a group, and we're not saying one is right or wrong, but when you're choosing a group, to make sure that this is the group that uplifts you and inspires you and elevates you and makes you better rather than drags you down into your own mind garbage. And there was also one other element. First of all, let me pause. Did you have anything else to share, Hannah, about?
No, I mean, I just agree with what you were saying. Shahar has told us over and over, you know, to focus on what we want rather than what we don't want. It's a way to bring about it into our life. And I think when you are in a group, like you said, that you feel supported and you're looking towards what you want to be, you become that. So, you know, I think it's, you said a lot. I also wanted to mention, we have a client right now, or that Linda, who has been amazing in her changes and her mindset and just is like transforming like crazy in front of our eyes. But she said she now sees herself as a normal eater. And I feel like that is the goal, like to not be obsessing about our food, to not even think about, is this something I should have? Shouldn't I have it? It just takes so much energy to whether it's a diet or some sort of plan or program. If you are constantly thinking about food and what you can have and what you can't have, your mindset is focused on all that negative stuff rather than on what you want, which is freedom, right? And I think it's so awesome to see people feeling like they are normal eaters, because this last year I've felt like a normal eater as well. Normal eaters sometimes eat things that aren't fantastic for them, but they also know when they're full, and they also know when they don't want to eat something because they're like just not into it. It's an unbelievable amount of feeling like I don't have to deal with that anymore. Like, I'm just so grateful. So grateful.
Yeah. I think, I mean, and yeah, I agree with what you said with Linda, the fact, because she went from being a binge eater as her identity, mm-hmm. then being someone recovering. Mm-hmm. And when she said, like, and it's been what? It's been about 15 weeks for her
that something she's been like that.
Yeah. And how long was she? I mean, I don't know how long she was struggling before that, but I know it was multiple decades.
Years.
Yeah. Cause she's a very determined person. She's the kind of person who does not give up and will try everything to help herself. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the case for a lot of people, is we don't give up. So we don't give up on programs, even though the program might not necessarily be what we need. And I think one of the biggest, and OA, I think, has what it has going for it, in the sense of what AA also has going for it, is it is the spiritual connection, and it's the growth mindset, and it's the community. And those things are extremely positive things. Mm-hmm. But when we're doing that around something that's actively harming us and then beating ourselves for why it's not working and we blame ourselves, that's an issue. We had somebody who worked with us back in 2020 during the pandemic who was in OA for 40 years and was fired by a dozen sponsors, mm-hmm. and was struggling her whole life since a trauma that she had when she was young. Mm-hmm. And she writes, she like once in a while, like maybe once every 6 months, she pops up in our grad group and she's like, hey, just want everyone to know I'm still doing great. And everything feels normal. And I'm not that active to like participating here, but I just want to say hi. And like, this really works. And I think what works the most and actually is in alignment with OA principles is it is the connection, but you're making the connection by going inward.
Yeah.
Right. Like, no, like you said, normal eaters listen to their bodies. Mm-hmm. The body is the one eating. Mm-hmm. So if we're trying to override the body with some kind of will or some kind of higher power, we're ignoring like God's gift of this body that's here to give us the signals for us to listen to. So it's, I remember what you wrote when you were finishing up the program. You were like, now I feel more connected with my higher power.
Absolutely. I feel like it's changed my whole dynamic. I'm even more grateful to my creator. I'm even more grateful because I can see in my body all the signs and signals that he gave me. I had the same kind of bad relationship with exercise and just changing and using these tools to change it to movement, even changing the name from exercise to movement had been huge for me because it's like movement I can do. Exercise always was like, I had a very unhealthy relationship with that. But now I can feel when my body feels good when it's moving, and when it's not feeling so great, then I know I need to change something. But I wasn't even aware of it before. It was something that was kind of like it was just an external force being put onto me saying, this is what you should do, whether my body or mind agreed with it or not. So I think I'm so much closer to my higher power now. Feel like, we're in a good spot.
That's so good.
Yeah. And it was scary for me to leave my 12-step group. I was very involved with it. I had a lot of loyalty to it, to the people there. I took it very seriously, and I still do. I do not want to trash talk OA at all. It is very helpful for some people. For me, it just wasn't helping me with my eating disorder. But part of the reason it was so difficult to leave was because I had felt so connected to all these people. But I realized that I was a sinking ship and I was just going to go down if I didn't leave. And so it was a choice for me. It was a risk. And I decided the risk was worth it. And I don't regret it. And the cool part is I'm actually able to speak to several people who are in the OA group who are also still struggling. And they'll ask me now, what did you do? And I'm able to share that. I'm not going to push what I did on anybody else. Everybody has their own journey, but I'm happy to share what worked for me.
Yeah. And I think that that's a good point, because when we get close with a community or people within our community, we don't want to leave and we don't want to lose the connections. And I think that is an important distinction that you made, because I know that for me with certain, even just friends, right? Like who I had felt like in a way I had outgrown, and I'm not saying you had outgrown the people.
No. Yeah, I understand.
But the, sometimes we can be so wrapped in the fear of loss, which is scarcity, right? It's all so rooted in scarcity, that we prevent ourselves from growing and from expanding. And in reality, when we grow and expand, that also can pave the way for others to grow and expand if what they've been doing also isn't working for them.
Right.
So it's part of, I think, being brave and taking risk, calculated risks, and being a trailblazer, willing to be different or willing to be out of the box. And then we can feel even honestly more connected. Yeah. So I appreciate you, Hannah, for coming on and talking about it. And I agree. Before we came on this thing, we came on with the intention, we're not here to bash ever. And I don't even like bashing, even though I talk all the time about how diets do not work. Mm-hmm. It's not a bashing. And I even talked about this on a podcast that I was just on earlier this week, because me and this other woman had worked at the same place, and that place spurred on both of our eating disorders. And then she went on to become an eating disorder therapist, and that whole field, she was like, her eating disorder became so much worse, like even just in the conventional way that eating disorders are treated. And we were talking about how that doesn't work. But at the same time, we acknowledge that every person who we've encountered in those programs or in doing this work are all well-intentioned. And that's how I always felt too. Even when I felt so out of integrity and that I was going against everything that I taught because I was myself binging secretly, my intentions were always so good and so pure. And I only wanted to help people even though I was suffering. So I believe that it's the same for anyone who volunteers their time in OA or works in some kind of diet plan. Of course, there's people out there who are just there for money or power or whatever, but I don't think it's the majority of us who do this work. Yeah. I think that all of us are well-intentioned and we're all finding our way. And the more we can speak up and be real and honest about the things that work and that don't work, the more we can help each other. So I appreciate you for coming on and sharing your story.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me share. I'm happy we were able to coordinate this.
Awesome. So for those of you guys who want to learn more about our way, which is really like when I talk about our method, it's not our way. I always say that good mentors or good teachers don't tell you to follow them. They teach you how to go within yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is basically our method. It's a way that we help you go within yourself to tune into your own body signals, to calm your own mind, to calm your own body. So that way your food choices no longer feel like they're coming from a place of compulsion, but rather from a place of conscious choice. So if you'd like to learn more about that, I invite you to explore other episodes of this podcast. You can also explore my website for the programs that we offer that you can guide yourself through, or you can have our coaching as you go through this process. And feel free to reach out anytime. We're always happy to hear from you. So with that, I'll say thank you, Hannah.
Thanks,
and Katie. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe, follow, or leave a kind review. If you're ready to get down to business and work with me to end your food issues permanently, please reach out or go to katiepapo.com for more info. Be kind to yourself, and I hope to see you for the next episode.